Trishvan mai tuna dan minaham. Jamunanta jale magnas. Tapyam manaha param tapaham. Nivritim minarajasyam. Trishvan mai tuna dan minaham. Jamunanta jale magnas. Tapyam manaha param tapaham. Nivritim minarajasyam. Trishva maituna dan minaham. Please chant. Jamunanta jale magnas. Tapyam manaha param tapaha. Nivritim minarajasya. Trishva maituna dan minaham. Jamunanta jale magnas. Tapyamanat param tapaha. Nivritim minarajasya. Trishva maituna dan minaham. Jamunanta jale magnas. Manat param tapaha. Nirvitim minarajasya. Trishva maituna dan minaham. And I'll read text 40, since 39 and 40 all together. No, I'll carry on. Jata sriho nirpam vipraha. Kanyam ekam ayachata, sopi aha kriyatam brahman, kamam kanya svayam vare. We'll do the word for word. Yamuna antaha jale. In the deep water of the river Yamuna. Magna, merged completely. Tapya manaha, executing austerities. Param, uncommon. Tapaha, austerity. Nirvitim, pleasure. Minarajasya, of a big fish. Drishtva, seeing. Maituna dharminaha, engaged in sexual affairs. And thereafter is the word for word for the next verse. okay, so I'll read the translation. Shobhari Rishi was engaged in austerity deep in the water of the river Yamuna when he saw a pair of fish engaged in sexual affairs. Thus he perceived the pleasure of sex life, and induced by this desire, he went to King Mandata and begged for one of the king's daughters. In response to this request, the king said, "O Brahmana, any of my daughters may accept any husband according to her personal selection." Purport, Sri Prabhupada. This is the beginning of the story of Shobhara Rishi. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Mandata was the king of Mathura, and Shobhari Rishi was engaged in austerity while submerged deep within the river Yamuna. When the Rishi felt sexual desire, he emerged from the water and went to King Mandata to ask that one of the king's daughters become his wife. Om Agyanatimarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Roma Padaswami Tinamine. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Navishesha Sunyavadi Paschacha Deshatarine. Manjakalpa to Rubya Shakripa Sandubya Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnevyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So the first thought that comes to mind with reading this particular verse of today is, you know, one can make a generalization that in having a new thought, one may choose to hang on to that thought and not lose it. And in this way, one will keep remembering that thought. So, prior to considering this aspect of this new thought that Sobari Muni had, or this generalization in relation to holding on to a thought, one can consider a little bit of Sobari Muni's or the nature of his activity. And he was deep in the water of the river Yamuna, and the expression used here is engaged in austerity. And that austerity, clearly it was an austerity of the body. Now, there's usually different aspects of performing austerity of the body. So, in practicing Krishna consciousness, one of those austerities of the body is just learning to offer respect to Krishna or to the demigods, the perfectly qualified brahmanas, the spiritual master. So it's an austerity of the body. And and even one can offer respect to parents if they happen to be conversant with spiritual knowledge. And a second austerity of the body is the practice of cleansing oneself, so externally and internally. And the third austerity of the body is learning to become very simple in one's behavior. So, and connected to this is not doing anything that's not sanctioned in the scriptures. And particularly here we're looking at, and this is generally an austerity of the body, it's not indulging how one's using one's body, not indulging in sex outside of marriage. And the reason, of course, is because it's not sanctioned in the scriptures. So always acting within the sanction of the scriptures. So these kind of austerities of the body are explained in Bhagavad Gita 17:14. Deva Dvija Guru Prajna Pujana Socham Aryavam Brahmacharyam Adita Cha Sharina Tapa Uchyate. So, Sobari Muni, he had this quality of being austere and of being simple in his behavior, since his particular sacrifice that he was performing was to purify his existence and to elevate himself to the spiritual plane. And Sobari Muni was engaged in a particular practice, the submergence of his body in the water of the Yamuna. And he was obviously being quite renounced, because being in that situation, naturally, any visual, auditory, tactile stimuli. It's been restricted. And generally, in practicing disciplining the body, there are different requirements for doing so. And particularly with doing meditational yoga, in that system, Krishna proclaims that yoga can't be properly executed, or this is meditational yoga, by somebody who eats too much or somebody who eats too little. So eating always has to be moderate, just enough to keep the body and the soul together. And also the purpose of eating, it has to be done with the proper understanding that it's not being done for the enjoyment of the tongue, but rather for the purpose that it's serving, meaning the maintenance of the body. And also in the meditational yoga system, it can't be executed if one is sleeping either too much or not sufficiently. So this means the insomniac would have a difficulty practicing meditational yoga, and also the sleep indulgent person would have an equal problem because the proper balance hasn't been struck to keep the body fit in relation to sleeping. So just the right amount should be there. So there are requirements for disciplining the body. And Krishna acknowledges that there's a difficulty of this meditational yoga practice. And that difficulty is highlighted in the chapter 6 and 35th verse. I'll just read it. This is Krishna Sri Bhagavan Uvacha. Asam sayam mahabaho mano durni graham chalam abhyasena tu kunteya vairagyena chagrihayate. So Krishna says, O mighty arm, son of Kunti, it is undoubtedly very difficult to curb the restless mind, but it is possible by suitable practice and by detachment. So the practice of Sobari Muni, of following the rules and regulations of placing his body, himself, in a very secluded place or a sacred place, focusing his mind on super soul, restraining his senses, restraining his mind, observing celibacy, remaining alone, is indeed a practice which Krishna is acknowledging is very difficult, and or it has a particular difficulty, let's put it that way. And that difficulty is this matter of curbing the mind. So all those requirements of the body may be in place in practicing meditational yoga, but the difficulty remains in curbing the mind. And in the little booklet, The Perfection of Yoga, there's a mention that in the current times, there's so many yogis and sages that are living in seclusion in India. And because it's not really possible to concentrate the mind upon super soul unless the yogi is in a very secluded place. So these yogis and sages, they emerge from the jungles, from the mountains, from the forest, every 12 years. So this currently goes on. And they emerge for a social function where they gather at a particular holy place. So, for example, the Kumbh Mela. So now, going back to Sobari Muni, in his particular seclusion, being in a sacred place in a particular spot in the Yamuna River, we see that he ran into this problem that the mind became obstinate, and that he ran into the difficulty of holding back the mind or controlling it. And the reason the mind showed the obstinacy is that, and it's stated here, he had a particular thought that he held on to, or the mind held on to. And how it's worded here is the pleasure of sex life. So this is what the thought was that he started holding on to. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he comments, we find this in Sri Manohar Shiksha, which was originally put together by Srila Raghunath Das Goswami, and then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is making a commentary. And he gives this a reason for why that kind of the soul itself is shifting to a material desire. And I'm just going to read his particular statement. Self-realization or true identification with one's spiritual nature is the purest form of attachment. The living entity's original and thus constitutional position is as an eternal servant of Sri Krishna. It is only by the force of illusion and material conditioning that the soul develops attachment for transient material things. So here we're getting Sir Bari Muni shifting his attention to something material and very transient. This allure of sexual pleasure, because he witnessed that between two fish. So because Lord Krishna is the soul of souls or super soul, it's really only on that platform of devotion to the Supreme Lord that one can be situated like very firmly and can be attached to one's real life. So that platform of devotion, it particularly requires hearing about Krishna. This is that transcendental method for purging the mind of any disturbance. So the reason this is so is that the more one hears about Krishna, the more one becomes enlightened and therefore detached from everything that draws the mind away from Krishna. So that hearing is the method for being able to detach the mind from those things that aren't in relation to Krishna. So if one were to make a comparison between impersonal spiritual detachment, which was Sir Bari Muni's particular route, it's much more difficult than attaching the mind to the activities of Krishna. There's not something to hold on to. So therefore, the mind can immediately be drawn by a stimulus that comes its way, which was what happened to him. So on a practical level, hearing about Krishna automatically allows for an attachment to the Supreme Spirit. And so it's much easier to detach the mind from activities that aren't devoted to Krishna. So here the detachment from matter by Sir Bari Muni didn't have that counterbalance of attaching the mind to spirit. So this was his problem. So the obstinacy of the mind, it led him to give up his particular act of austerity or his particular penance. And the one he was practicing was submerging himself in the water of the Yamuna, which was a particular place he chosen as his spot for seclusion for meditation. Now, Sir Bari Muni, he's actually, you could say, coming to act against a judgment that's expressed by Krishna regarding renunciation, because he's following this route of becoming renounced. And this is Krishna's statement: acts of sacrifice, charity, and penance are not to be given up. They must be performed. Indeed, sacrifice, charity, and penance purify even the great souls. So Bari Muni was stepping away from his particular austerity or penance. He literally got out of the water, made his way immediately to the king to go and ask the king for one of his daughters. And so Srila Prabhupada, he's explaining that this yajna, dana, tapa, karma are acts that yogis should perform, acts of sacrifice, charity, penance, austerity, for the advancement of society. So there's a broader reason for those acts to be performed. And interestingly enough, so Bari Muni, he turned to, you could say, a sacrifice that would regulate the mind. So that sacrifice, the Vivaha Yajna, it's a marriage ceremony. So this normally is excellent to regulate the mind, because then it'll become very peaceful for spiritual advancement. And so generally that sacrifice can be encouraged for spiritual advancement. But we have to take into account his particular situation. So we have to look at the broader frame of reference. So in the category of sacrifice that's meant to please Krishna or the Supreme Lord, marriage is usually recommended for a person like in the lower stages of their life, meaning they're at a certain point in their spiritual advancement, and to move forward it becomes necessary. So generally it's a young person. And we come to hear that actually this wasn't the situation for Sir Bari Muni. He wasn't in that position. In fact, he was at a very advanced age. We'll come to read that he actually describes himself as being very feeble and that his skin was hanging. So, you know, the skin draws away from the bone with age. Gravity just forces all the muscles down and the skin starts sagging. So he's presenting himself in that particular stage of life, coming before the king and asking for the king, one of the king's 50 daughters. And the king's response, so clearly the king is seeing visibly the condition of Sir Bari Muni and what stage of life he's at. And the king very, you could say, politely tells him, well, you know, each of my daughters is permitted to choose a husband according to her personal desire. So it's rather a fantastic response, because, you know, he's putting the onus on the daughters. So we read that, so you could say the king wasn't specifically facilitating such a marriage. And then we read that Sir Bari Muni is going to actually make an arrangement that would prompt the king's daughters to make the choice in his favor. So he's going to, you know, really come to perform an activity that has him trying to create a specific result in this pursuit of marriage. And usually this particular act is meant to purify one's existence, but Sir Bari Muni, even right from the beginning, he's acting, going to create a particular result. He's going to force the act of marriage. We'll read how he actually alters his body even to put himself in the position of a young man or a young body coming to request the king's daughters to accept a husband. So these were just some of the very, very short thoughts that were came based on this short purport. If there's any thought to expand our discussion.
I'm wondering if there's a connection between this and the term Bhuti Yoga. I've been trying to understand the difference between Bhuti Yoga and just Bhakti Yoga. But I'm in this context that, like, the Bhuti, they're the intelligence to not, like, hold on to such a thought, like, the intelligence to know that, like, a temporary pleasure is not to be pursued. Like, it's like a certain level of intelligence that you can discriminate that this won't make me happy. This is actually suffering. But like the mind and the senses get disturbed from previous samskaras. But that strong intelligence to develop what you actually want, like eternal life, self-realization, God realization. I'm wondering, is that a good understanding of what Bhuti Yoga is? Is like developing your intelligence, and even though your senses and mind are disturbed, you develop this strong intelligence to know what's actually best for you.
So the the question is, is it the correct understanding of Bhuti Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, that one is developing intelligence such that even when there's disturbance of the mind or the senses, that intelligence is allowing one to push aside disturbance in the mind and the senses because of previous samskaras, such that through the intelligence one is making that choice always rather for something that's connected to self-realization, God-realization. So certainly that is the correct understanding of Bhuti Yoga or Bhakti Yoga. That one's increasingly being given the power to discriminate. So it's a gift that's being given. The intelligence is allowed to develop that power of discrimination such that it's always making the choice or being able to evaluate circumstances to make a choice to remain on the path of self-realization by virtue of the fact that the soul, in having made its connection with Krishna, is steadfastly adhering to those practices that support the development of the intelligence. So the practices, you know, there was some description through the course of expressing the various thoughts connected to Sir Bhari Muni that the various austerities of the body that one practices, the austerity of the mind is the one that is very pertinent in your question, because there's an acknowledgement that the austerity of the mind is, or the mind is the area in which a problem can arise. So one may be able to adhere to the austerities of cleansing the body, learning to offer respects to spiritual master, Vaishnavas, etc. But the problem comes in the disturbance that happens in the mind. And this was very much the highlight of this particular little discourse. So how is there an interplay between the mind and the intelligence such that the disturbance that's present in the mind, the previous impressions made from through this life, through one's going through growing up, one's family, one's education, etc. How does that not come to pull one away from the path of self-realization? So it's a little bit like if one were to make a comparison to being in a boat and there's waves of desires and waves of thoughts that are coming. And so one wants to keep steering and not actually be carried away on a particular wave and go off in the wrong direction. So the method is to hear and hear and hear more, because the hearing is in some sense it creates a kind of frame of reference that is then always present there, that one can look to as the mind starts pulling, desiring, one can turn back to that frame of reference and evaluate and make a better judgment. Without hearing, it's difficult to have that frame of reference. It means one will just be acting on the mind and think that is reality. So sometimes we may see somebody you know, in devotional life, the mind is so strong that the person will be acting fully on the impetus of the mind. So perhaps there's a request to perform a service and the mind internally may be saying, I don't want to do this. Oh, no. I prefer to do that. Or right now I had a nice rest in mind. No. Intelligence, because the frame of reference is, you know, one is trying to perform acts of devotion. That's the sacrifice one's performing. So one's going to actually put the act of devotion, the sacrifice, first. So I will sacrifice my desire for rest right now. My mind is resisting this, but this is the right thing to be doing at this time. So the intelligence knows the act of sacrifice is greater rather than giving into the bodily demand. So one will make that choice. But a person who hasn't been hearing, understanding the philosophical basis and attempting to apply it will give into the bodily demand and may in fact even express what's in their mind. Can't even control that part. So the verbalization will come out. I can't do that now. Don't want to do it. So the because there's different levels of control of the mind. I mean, you know, if one restrains at least verbally what's in the mind, that's good. Then actually turning it into action to directly not follow the dictates of the mind is the second thing. But if the person can't even restrain verbally, can't restrain action, means a lot more hearing needs to be done. You need that frame of reference. So That allows one not to be swept away with, you know, what the mind is, because the mind is very strong, so it's pushing. So with each push of the mind, and that's Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's statement, you know, the particular conditioning, you know, the things we've learned. So the mind is accustomed to certain patterns, and after a while, if you observe the mind, you see that it goes in cycles. There's, it's learned habits. It functions a particular way. You know, we had so many years of exposure to our parents, and they were a particular personality, we are a particular personality, and a certain dynamic builds up, and then the mind records that dynamic. So there's a pattern that plays itself out regularly. Like sometimes you see it with parents and children. You'll see some child will just give a little indication and the parent will immediately respond to their child. Another child will have to pull on the garments of the parent and you know, keep asking and asking, and after 5 minutes the parents might casually look at it and dismiss it. A pattern in the mind is already developed. The one child has learned has to go through huge frustration to get what they need. The other child has learned, oh, there's always support, very easy to navigate life. The mind learns the pattern. So in practicing devotional life, the intelligence, that frame of reference, is as the mind is playing out its pattern, the mind that's learned the pattern of frustration, I have to work so hard to get what's needed, that mind will have to be kept in check. Like, okay, this something will be given to you at the right time. You know, just please wait. You know, no need to throw a tantrum, get upset. Please wait. So you have to speak to the mind. So the intelligence knows that the mind is there to be kept in check. The other mind that's, you know, learns to be very comfortable, feel supportive, may not have the demanding thing. it'll just be a very satisfied kind of mind, and then maybe there's less work to be done by the intelligence. But either way, that frame of reference, that discrimination, has to be applied in terms of managing the mind. One has to manage the mind. Can't, like, let it just run its course. So, hearing. So, I think we have our short discourse. Thank you very much for the question. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.